This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Tuesday, the 1st of April. I'm Alec Hogg, and here's your BizNews briefing. Well, it's after 12 o'clock, so you know nothing that we are saying to you today is an April Fool's joke, but I can tell you that, it feels like it. It's just insane what's happening at the moment. And starting with that bizarre case against the forensic lawyers, Sarah Berger and Bradley Conradi, it took a turn for the worse this morning when 7 police vehicles and 20 officials arrived at Conradi's house to issue a court order. The intimidation of Conradi and Berger is the latest escalation in a saga that began when they were called in to investigate corruption at the University of Fort Hare. They refused to change their report, which implicated some politically connected crooks. And, well, they have been feeling the full force of those influential people ever since. Look out for an interview with Berger and Conradi on BizNews TV this afternoon. This morning, the Democratic Alliance cancelled a press conference which was scheduled to provide progress on the discussions being made in the impasse over the budget. You might recall the budget was first tabled on the 19th of February. Well, supposed to have been tabled. It was postponed that day. Then it was postponed until the 12th of March. That also did not see any agreement, although the budget actually was tabled in Parliament. But it's not going to get through if the DA don't vote for it. We've had all kinds of discussions thereafter, including the ANC trying to find other partners to eject the DA so it can go ahead with the VAT increases. I had a chat this morning with Mark Burke, who is the Democratic Alliance spokesman on finance. Let's have a listen to some of the highlights.
The budget that's now being proposed is 3 times the size of the inflation-adjusted Nelson Mandela budget from 1995. And I don't think South Africans have the impression that this government is doing more for them than that government tried to do for them. So we've got a broken system where the revenue is not the problem. It's the fact that the expenses are inefficient. And alongside that inefficient government spending, we've got an economy that just won't take off, even though we've got great people and we've got resources that other countries can only dream of. And so the budget should be an enabling mechanism, perhaps the most powerful mechanism any government has at its disposal, is the revenue that it will spend on trying to get the economy going and people into work. I'll just quickly run through, if you're amenable to it, a set of ideas that we've proposed. The first is no new tax increases, be that VAT, personal income, or corporate tax. And of course, the ANC seems willing to die on the hill of some form of VAT increase. And already we've shifted the conversation from 2% to 1%, but that's simply not enough. You know, South Africans are already overburdened with tax. So first, no taxes. 2 is we need to do an emergency spending review where we cut things that aren't needed right away. So advertising budgets, catering budgets, things that are just superfluous and not adding anything. The third is we need to do a longer term spending review. And I think this is crucial to point out to South Africans. So we talk in the business community about zero-based budgeting. And it's this idea that you focus on the goals that you want for the year, not on last year's budget. And the spending review will be a mechanism to implement that. We hope that we can unlock within a year 80 to 100 billion rand, which would be multiples of any VAT increase that has been proposed. We do need a bit of time for that.
I suppose what's happening in the United States right now with the whole DOGE episode, talking earlier this morning to Rob Herzog, I suggested to him that if they are finding billions and billions in the United States where they have appointed people ostensibly on merit, in South Africa where you have cadres who've been deployed there with zero merit being involved, if we were to have a DOGE, you can just imagine what might be uncovered there. Is that another way of looking at it from the DA's perspective, that you are looking at perhaps not as aggressively or radical as Musk and co. are doing, but at least to focus on that area?
Absolutely. And I think there's a bit of emotional weight around Elon Musk, the individual at the moment, that makes some people check out of, I think, the innovation that's happening the world over in governance. You know, if you look at Argentina, they almost pioneered this under Milei. They said that there's no money. we can't afford to keep spending money on things that make no sense and undermine the economy. So you've got, again, two things happening. The one is the cost to your national fiscus of really stupid government departments and government entities. And that should get cut because you're going to have to fund it with tax money. But the second, more pernicious thing almost, is the fact that these inefficient entities get in the way of business. They get in the way of the economy growing. So when you start cutting the inefficient spending, you also start letting loose the economy to do what it does best, which is innovate and find ways to produce that's competitive the world over. And so if you can innovate in the way that you govern, which would be probably cutting back excessive and unnecessary regulation, cutting back unnecessary government departments that imposes that regulation, what you also do by implication is you let the economy loose. And so that combination is super exciting. And you don't have to believe that, you know, Elon Musk is an exceptional human being to believe that that's a good idea. Now, I happen to think that Elon Musk, whatever you think of his political ambitions, is a remarkable engineer in the way that he thinks about things. And so I think we could probably learn a lot about how we, in a structured way, solve problems. We start with the end in mind. We work back by adding in the constraints. And once we've done that, we are able to, in a systematic way, solve our problems.
When are we going to have a finalization of what's happening?
Well, we are ever optimistic. We'll see what the course of today brings, but the series of bills that now need to be passed will have to be passed over the next 2 months. So there's the fiscal framework potentially this week, and then three bills, which is the Division of Revenue Appropriations and eventually Tax Laws Amendment. And that would have run for 2 or 3 months in any way, even if there hadn't been a delay. So hopefully over the next 2 to 3 months, we see a coming together of the parties and a solution found.
There's a heck of a lot that is in the full interview, which is on BizNews TV with Mark Burke. But I just refer you back to what he said right in the beginning, that take away inflation. So in real terms, the budget today that the ANC is proposing is three times the budget that the Mandela government proposed. So it is clear to anybody that there's massively more spending. And whether or not that spending is being done efficiently, I'll leave to you. What I did say to Mark in that interview was perhaps the greatest thing that Elon Musk and co. are doing is that they are making the government spending absolutely transparent. My goodness, it's a long time overdue in this country for that to occur. Well, someone who's also going on about this kind of thing is Rob Herzhoff. We had a fascinating discussion this morning. In the initial stages, picking up on how he is going to become a media mogul. Yeah, Herzhoff is starting his own media company, his own media operation. It's got nothing to do with BizNews, in case you were wondering, but it is going to be a force that you can be sure of. But in our conversation, as we do every 2 weeks, we spoke about business as well. And in that part of it, we have a potential here to perhaps turn things around with the United States. Remember, the U.S. is 74 times the economy of South Africa, 74 times. Or maybe put a different way, the policies that have been implemented in the United States means that on average, the GDP per capita, so each person in the U.S., is 14 times higher than the GDP per capita in South Africa. In other words, what people in South Africa are worth relative to the US. So you'd think, surely we can get a friend there. Surely this friend can assist us. And surely people can actually be more prosperous in our country. So I asked Rob Herzhoff, what are the chances of South Africa actually reaching out and turning everything around and becoming a friend of the United States?
Not in the short term. You know, the ANC has no leadership. You know, Gauteng does its own thing. The Leila Khalid lunatics do their own thing. Cyril is not in control. He has absolutely no control over the ANC whatsoever. Everyone's doing their own thing, breaking, stealing, feeding their cadres, not wanting to give up their privileges. The ANC is not in control of itself, let alone the country. So lunatics at different corners of the ANC and different corners of the country will still keep poking America in the eye, because they're receiving money from Iran, because they're able to steal, and because it suits them. So America will just get increasingly pissed off with South Africa. And I do think targeted sanctions are coming. I think the likes of Naledi Pandor, Cyril Ramaphosa, Julius Malema, etc., are going to get targeted sanctions put upon them. And it's brutal. It's not, they're not going to enjoy it at all.
What
you
are know, they?
It changes your life. It hits you in the pocketbook. You can't travel to the West. You can't use intermediary banks that are linked to America. And America will put huge pressure on other Western countries to adopt a similar approach to these people. There's a lot of pain coming for these people. But I mean, who knows what will change? If you can keep stealing in South Africa, maybe you don't need to travel anywhere else.
Or maybe you can position yourself as a martyr, that the Americans are coming after me and oh, poor me, and you better vote more for me. But what does it mean, this individual targeted sanctions? How else have they addressed this around the world and used it as a tool for the Americans to get their way, I suppose?
Well, you've got anti-country tactics like tariffs, you know, cancelling a go, which everyone, it hurts everyone in South Africa. Those tariffs and broad-based sanctions and cancelling agreements hurts all South Africans. And I think the Americans, bipartisan Americans, Democrats and Republicans, know that hurting the country and hurting the people isn't the way forward. But I think targeted sanctions is, pick the people who are working with terrorists, who are doing hate speech, who are obviously corrupt. Just read the Zondo Commission. The names are all in there. Just read the commission, target those people. And America, punishments are coming, and they are severe.
And at some point, you would assume that the people who are voting for that political party would perhaps be looking for people that will try and enhance the economic situation of South Africa, not retracted. How much further can we go down?
Until senior members of the ANC put their hands up and say, it's not working, let's force a change. And I don't know who those people are. I was hoping Enoch could be that person. Unless that happens, and unless the Gorgors wake up and realize the ANC's let them down, you know, it's not going to happen. If it still takes a bus ride to the poll, a T-shirt, posters up a month before, and a thing of Kentucky Fried Chicken on the day to get your vote, if that is still the case, then we really don't stand a chance. Then we really are heading over the cliff. It's too long to convert those people.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Well, some sad news now. South Africa lost one of its very best yesterday when the four times Oxford Blue, Dr. Willem van der Merwe, passed away through oesophageal cancer. He is well known amongst the Springboks and indeed our two best players, Siya Kolisi and Peter Steph de Tooy. My BizNews colleague, Kerry Lanahan, drew on a recent interview that we had with Dr. van der Merwe to put together this tribute.
BizNews is deeply saddened to report the passing of Dr. Willem van der Merwe, a pioneering orthopedic surgeon and former cricketer. A man described by his friends as larger than life, incredibly humble, and dedicated to restoring movement to young and old alike. He leaves behind an extraordinary legacy. Born on July 20th, 1960, Willem van der Merwe was a gifted sportsman who played first-class cricket in South Africa and later for Oxford University. His sporting prowess, however, was only the prelude to a career that would change lives far beyond the cricket field. After his studies at Oxford, Dr. van der Merwe dedicated himself to orthopedic surgery, becoming a leading expert in arthroscopy, knee surgery, and sports medicine. He served as president of both the South African and International Societies of Arthroscopy, Knee Surgery, and Orthopedic Sports Medicine. His impact reached the highest levels of sports. South African rugby captain Siya Kolisi, along with Springbok stars Peter Steph du Toit and Hendre Pollard, trusted him with their careers. When Kolisi suffered a devastating knee injury just 6 months before the 2023 Rugby World Cup, It was Dr. Fundamava who performed surgery that defied medical norms. Khaleesi returned to the field in record time, an astonishing 119 days, leading his team onto the Millennium Stadium pitch in April 2022. In an interview with BizNews journalist Linda van Tilburg, Dr. Fundamava humbly credited Khaleesi's mindset rather than the surgery itself, saying, "Athletes like Sia and Chad Leclos have something special. Their belief in themselves sets them apart." His unconventional approach, including urging Khaleesi to ditch crutches early and cycle against medical norms, drew criticism but ultimately cemented his reputation as a game-changer in sports medicine. Beyond the accolades, Dr. Fundamava was a compassionate and inspiring figure, beloved by those who knew him. His dedication to helping people regain mobility made him a hero to countless individuals whose lives he transformed. His passing is a great loss to the medical and sporting communities alike, but his legacy will endure in the lives he touched, the knees he healed, and the hearts he inspired. Rest in peace, Dr. Willem Fundamava.
What a beautiful tribute. Thank you, Kerry. Well, on to the international scene now, and one of the highlights of BNC 7 was the address by UK political heavyweight Aaron Banks. He was the man who funded Brexit, the biggest ever contributor to politics in the UK, and a very big driver behind the Reform Party, which, according to the polls, is the most popular party in Britain, ahead of both the Labour and the Conservative Party. He's also a confidant of Nigel Farage and Donald Trump, and over the weekend was nominated as the Reform Party's mayoral candidate for the West of England, that election to be held on the 1st of May after the retirement of the incumbent. Well, all of that, and here he was at our BizNews conference to give us some insights into Donald Trump, who, as mentioned earlier, he knows well, and his thoughts on Africa.
In terms of spheres of influence, I think Donald Trump sees Africa as an area where he wants to get the Chinese out of Africa. And I think if you look at what he's doing with the Russians, trying to seal a peace with Ukraine and bring the Russians kind of back into the tent rather than outside the tent, I think the threat of Russia is massively overestimated. Its economy is the size of Spain. It's batting way beyond its averages, whereas Trump would see the real enemy as China. And so I think he's thinking we'll settle this issue and then we'll move on to the main event, which is China. And I think he probably sees South Africa and Africa as mineral rich in the same way as Greenland. And I think they're going to definitely turn their attention to kicking the Chinese out of Africa.
When you look forward to the excitement that we're going to see around the world and in Africa, how does it pan out for you?
I think it's impossible to say, because as I said, Trump is attempting to rip up the world order. I think it was Machiavelli who said there's nothing more dangerous or difficult than changing the existing order, because the people that might benefit from the new order don't yet know it, and the people that have got the vested interest don't want to change. And I think that's where, with Trump, I mean, it could go horribly wrong or it could go horribly right. So we have to wait and see how the whole thing's going to sort of, you know, it's going to settle. I mean, I think he's on a mission. And that's why, by the way, I think he's talking about Greenland or territory. I think he wants to do something that's, you know, changes the course of history. For right or wrong, America's going to be a lot more robust, you know, than this kind of liberal democracy that it was. It's going to be something different. But what it looks like, it's hard to say.
How long might it take for this all to give us a steer on whether he has been horribly right or horribly wrong?
Well, I'm sure half the audience thinks he's horribly wrong already, but and half think he's probably right. I think it. Sorry? Who gives a rat's ass about the stock market? I don't. It's just a weighing system for sentiment. And I would argue most asset prices in the world are overpriced anyway. You know, if you're a kid in London, you can't possibly buy a house because it's ridiculously overpriced. Maybe there's an argument that these asset bubbles are built up with money printed by the central government, ultra low interest rates. Maybe we need a bit of harsh realignment, you know, and generally you've got older people who've got way too much money. The younger people have got absolutely nothing. So maybe it needs a damn good shake-up. You know, every so often in the world needs to be taken by the scruff and given a bloody good shake. And I think that's what Trump's, you know, busy doing. But I think for strategic reasons, South Africa will be right at the front of it. Because I think strategically, America is going to need rare minerals. It's going to need resource. And so where does it look for that? Well, he's talked about Greenland. The nearest spot really is Africa. And so I think they're going to be coming out of the blocks hard on realigning African politics.
Fascinating insights, and a man who is playing a big role, very close to Nigel Farage. And he and Nigel were the very first people to be invited first people from abroad to be invited to meet with Donald Trump after his 2016 presidential election victory. What I found interesting there was the connection that you get from a guy like Aaron Banks with what's happening on a day-to-day basis. He talks there about young people not having the ability to buy houses in England. And that's something where Donald Trump has really connected. It's almost like he's moved away from the politics of upper echelons to listening to what ordinary people are talking about. That was his campaign, and he has followed through on it, like this conversation that we pick up from now in the Oval Office yesterday, which was on an unlikely topic, but something that means a lot to ordinary Americans. For a while, the technology sector has been scalping tickets. In other words, for concerts, they put through these bots, buy up all the tickets, and then massively inflate the prices so that the ordinary people who want to go to the concerts, the fans, have to pay far more than they would have otherwise. Yesterday, Trump made sure that he's going to stop that practice, and he brought along Kid Rock, who he says was an old-time friend of his. Let's listen in.
A friend of mine, Kid Rock, sometimes referred to as Bob. I know him as Bob, but he's been a good friend for a long time, many years, and he's been after something that is for the good of a lot of people, including, in particular, the public, and having to do with ticket sales and scalping and all of the gouging that you have been reading about. It's gotten worse and worse with time. And I didn't know too much about it, but I checked it out, and it is a big problem. And I thought, I think you've been trying to get this done for 20 years or something. He said Trump got it done in 2 weeks. But we came up with a very serious EO, and I'm going to sign it now, and maybe I'll ask you, Will, to explain a little bit about it, please.
Of course, sir. So this is an executive order, as you said, that deals with the ticket reselling business. For fans of live entertainment and for entertainers as well, the ticket reselling industry has become a huge issue. These people use bots and computer algorithms to buy up huge blocks of tickets and then jack up the price so that fans of live entertainers like Mr. Ritchie, I almost called him Mr. Rock, don't have access to concerts the way that they should. And when they do, it's at exorbitantly high prices. So what this executive order does, it charges the FTC and the Department of Justice with rigorously enforcing laws on the books in collaboration with state attorneys general that have power over consumer protection and other people who have the power to really crack down on this issue so that entertainers and fans won't be subject to these abusive and oftentimes illegal practices.
Good. Thank you very much. Bob, do you want to say something?
Yeah, anybody who's, it doesn't matter your politics. First off, thank you, Mr. President, because this has happened at lightning speed. I know you put, I want to make sure Lena Habba Alina Hava gets her credit too, because I know she worked very hard on this, but thank you for making this happen so quick. Anyone who's bought a concert ticket in the last decade, maybe 20 years, no matter what your politics are, knows that it's a conundrum. You buy a ticket for $100, by the time you check out, it's 170. You don't know what you can charge for, but more importantly, these bots, you know, they come in to get all the good tickets to your favorite shows you want to go to, and then they're relisted immediately for sometimes a 400 or 500% markup. And the artists don't see any of that money. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is a great first step. I would love down the road if there would be some legislation that we could actually put a cap on the resale of tickets. And I'm a capitalist and a deregulation guy, but they've tried this in some places in Europe, and it seems to be the only thing that's us as artists to be able to get the tickets into the hands of the fans at the prices we set. I'll be the first one to say, and I know the president doesn't like when I say this, but I'm a little overpaid right now. It's kind of ridiculous. I would rather be, you know, a hero to working class people and have them be able to come attend my shows and give them a fair ticket price. I can't control that right now. So hopefully this is a step to really be able to make that happen.
Well, that's your briefing for today. Until tomorrow, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.